And welcome again to another episode of A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. I'm here with Dave Douglas, and my name is Michael Bates.
We're talking to somebody who's, as far as I know, not a musician this week, and this will be the first episode like that, although...
He's very inextricably linked.
He's worked with a lot of musicians. Yeah. He's designed a lot of my albums over many years now, and a lot of other albums that you've seen, so we'll be talking to Steve Byram.
He's an incredible commercial and fine artist, and for those of you who don't know him, he's responsible for a lot of the Screwgun, Tim Burns record company's covers. He's also done Craig Taborn's Django Bates. He did the License to Ill cover for Beastie Boys, Slayer, Rain and Blood, Drew Gress, Uri Kane, Living Color, Paul Motion, you name it. He's an incredible artist, great guy to talk to, and let's get to it.
Did you say I got a lot to learn? Well, don't think I'm trying not to learn.
Hey, Steve, it's Dave Douglas.
Dave, how are you, man?
Good, how are you doing?
Not bad.
You know, Michael's here, too.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Hey, good?
Good. Glad to have you on the show.
Hey, glad to be here. As somebody said, I'm glad to be anywhere.
So how are we going to talk about your cover art and all of your art in the podcast format?
That's a good question, because you can't see anything.
Just say it's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. That's for sure.
I think some of the music on the records that you've done artwork for, you know, the art is really, the music is really evocative of the art and vice versa.
For sure.
Would you agree? Well,
in a way, I'm not a good person to ask. That certainly is like what I set out to do. You know, I think a lot of times I'm too close to it to really make that final decision, that final call on the thing. Mm. I like to think that's what I'm trying to do, but I mean, the test of it is like, okay, well, do other people see it that way? And I guess, enough people have that I guess I've been successful.
Absolutely. And, you know, both Dave and I have had the honor of working with you and you know, one of the first things when, you know, after I contacted you about doing an album cover for me, we went and had coffee. I don't know if you remember. I think we talked for what, like 3-4 hours?
Yeah.
Street art.
No, that was good. I mean, because the interesting thing about that for me was, you know, we were having a pretty broad conversation. We weren't necessarily trying to talk about, oh, what about this or what about that or what about this. And that conversation was really helpful to me, because in having it with you, it's like, well, I kind of got to know where you were coming from, and that gives me a context to put everything in. I mean, it's like the same thing with Dave. I mean, Dave and I we go back a long way, and it's like we've never sat down and had one of those conversations like that. That was kind of a condensed form in it. I mean, Dave and I have been talking back and forth over, like, Jesus Christ, you know.
20 years, Steve.
20 years, yeah, you know. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And it's not that we discuss the matters, like, you know, directly or concretely so much. It's just kind of like this ongoing dialogue. I mean, and to me, that's fun. That's better than sitting down and saying, okay, well, I got this, and here's what I'm trying to say, and how can we say that? You know, I mean, it's not about that. I mean, those are hard questions to answer, but in all those other conversations, I think they ultimately do get answered.
Wow.
So I guess, and I only got a guess here, because I'm not a musician, but I would think, or my imaginings of what musicians do, I think it's kind of a similar process, except you guys are all sitting around playing. You know what I mean? I mean, and I guess there It comes from getting a feel for people. It's like all the musicians that I've worked with, they've all been together and worked together for long, long periods of time. I mean, you know, and I think there's a certain, I don't know, way of dealing with each other that evolves over that time that leads to the way the music sounds. And so that's how I imagine that. And it's like, this is kind of a similar thing, except, you know, I'm not necessarily playing musical notes out of an instrument. It's like I'm trying to do some sort of visual, you know, analog or component to that.
Mm-hmm. But I know, you know, you also spend a lot of time listening to the music, which is not something that every designer does.
Well, that's what I've got to go on. I mean, there's no, you know, there's no lyrics to deal with. I mean, as far as finding out, I mean, not that I would ever try to illustrate, even if there were lyrics, anything that had to do with that, right? And
right, because Beastie Boys, they had lyrics, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm not, they did. You know, and to a certain extent, you know, but I wouldn't sit down and say, okay, how am I going to talk about this or that? But I mean, in dealing with instrumental music, I mean, you've got to be really familiar with it or listen to it a lot just so you know where it's coming from. So, and this is going to sound stupid, but I know what I'm talking about. It's like it shows you the direction that the visual should come from. Mm-hmm. I mean, it tells you in some sort of a, you know, I don't know. You just kind of got to plug into it, I suppose. And if you've done that right, or if you get the point right, I think it comes out good.
Who are some of the artists that you've done covers for?
Well, I did a lot of covers for Paul Motion.
Mm-hmm.
Done many things for Tim Byrne.
Yes.
Mark Elias. There'll be gaps here as I try to remember everything.
Well, or Uri Kane, right?
Uri, yeah. Did
Drew
a lot
Gress.
Of for Uri, Drew.
Yeah. All the Winter and Winter and JMT stuff.
Not as many of the Winter and Winter things, but. Okay. Pretty much 100% of the JMT stuff. In fact, that's what got me into. I mean, that's where I'm through the JMT stuff. It's where I met all these people. Basically,
oh, I see.
I mean, the start of it was I was an art director at CBS Records, and I met Tim Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, I met Stefan Winter, and things just spiraled from there. But yeah, I did all of the JMT stuff from that point on. And Winter and Winter, I did a lot of stuff in the beginning and then kind of segued out of that because Stefan started working with a guy over there in Germany.
Yeah. I guess I was thinking primarily of that Charms of the Night Sky package, which is really stunning. You know, multiple pages. Yeah, that's incredible.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, that was, you know, that was kind of one of the early Winter and Winter things after Stefan had just put that label together. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was nice because the way Stefan had that packaging set up was you had this, like, multi-panel fold-out that was four-color double-sided in the middle of, you know, just, it was different than a CD booklet because it didn't fold up into a jewel case. I mean, Stefan, to his credit, was... hated jewel cases. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to design something that was more like a book, right? So that was the whole thing behind that packaging. And that fold-out piece was always nice because you could, I don't know, I always looked at it like that was some, that was a narrative that you could tell. You had, mm-hmm. it was a two-dimensional, non-moving, animated thing. So, yeah, it was really exciting for me to start playing with that, because that was a different thing than I was used to.
Yeah, yeah, and it was, the other one that you did that, for me, on Winter and Winter was Songs for Wandering Souls. You remember that one?
Yes, I do. That was fun, too.
Nice, the little fold out is always sweet. And actually, an experience you don't have with your artwork is when I travel around the world and people come up with the CDs after the show for me to sign them.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's always like, oh wow, and they want you to sign on a specific page of the fold out.
Wow, that's cool.
You know what I mean? So it's like people are having this interactive relationship with the work that you're putting out there.
Well, I've heard from quite a few people. I mean, it's like, you know, I refer to myself sometimes half jokingly as I'm a cult artist, you know, because I hear from people, you know, like on Facebook and just, you know, all this kind of stuff. I hear from people that, you know my work from various things, from various countries. And it's kind of nice to hear, you know, to hear about all that, you know.
Like, okay, so I'll just, you know, my experience as the musical artist and going to you as a designer with a lot of faith and some trepidation. But I we talk a little bit and I have a couple ideas, but I try not to be too in your face.
No, you've always been quite respectful.
Give you a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
And then you know what comes back, I always love it. I don't always get it at first, and then things start to dawn on me, connections to the music and to the project and the ideas. But I also, I never really figured out, you know, where do you begin? Like, how does it start for you, the process of designing one of these packages?
I listen to the music first off.
But I mean more like in your own medium.
Well, it depends. I mean, if I'm like making art, I collect or start thinking about or start putting together elements that I think are appropriate to the various projects that I'm working on. All right, that can be a bunch of stuff that I'm going to turn into some sort of an illustration or turn into some sort of a, you know, more solid, you know, just graphic representation of it. You know, sometimes it's a matter if there's enough of a budget involved and either I can involve a photographer or sometimes, like, I mean, in working with you, you've brought a couple of really great photographers to me. In fact, the guy that did the photography for
Be Still, yeah.
For Be Still, I mean,
Austin Nelson.
You had come to me with his work and said, I really like this guy, I'm interested in using it. And it's like, he really knocked me out. You know, it was really a pleasure. It was a matter of me going through a bunch of work and then kind of like editing into some sort of a narrative as I saw it. And, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, I usually start out by trying to make some sort of a determination about what my elements are going to be. Now, these elements, if it's a bunch of photography, there's not much that I'm going to do to that because the photographs are going to be taken. And
when you say elements, though, I mean, it sounds like collage on some level.
Yeah, and if it's okay, and
even sorry, Michael, no, we're all like jumping to ask you these questions, Steve. So sorry, you have to be patient here. but I mean, even with photographs, it on some level, it is a collage process for you, or.
I see design as a collage process, really, you know, because, I mean, you've got different elements. You've got topography, you've got, you know, graphic devices, and just, you know, it's a bunch of elements that you fold together into something. I mean, it's not like, I don't know, that's just how I understand the design process, and mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, sometimes they literally turn out to look like collages. Other times they don't, but I still kind of see them that way because, like I said, they are a blending of various elements. one thing that I always kind of thought to do, and is you know, I don't know, it wasn't that I set out, I mean, because I don't know how to exactly do it on purpose, but I wanted to develop a signature. So if I did something, it would look like I did it. Huh. And
but I mean, you know, one element that we've mentioned but not too in depth is the typography. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like a huge part of what you do, and you know, inventing fonts and inventing ways, like the way that you made my album Keystone look by creating a unique font, and almost like, I don't, logo is a bad word, but like, you know, there was this stamped image that you created that went with that picture of Fatty Arbuckle,
right,
in this really unique way.
Well, that was inspired. That was I loved working on that project too. In fact, I think that's one of the favorite things that I've done just along the way. And the thing that was, or the inspiration for that initially, and it doesn't often happen that it doesn't work out that way for me usually, that I could actually pinpoint something that was an inspiration. But the inspiration for that was, since you were doing music for a silent film, it's like, I love silent films. I really love graphically the title cards and
right.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the inspiration for that. I wasn't trying to make it look like a title card, and there wasn't any particular title card that I looked at, you know, but just the whole idea of the, you know, the old style typography that was prevalent then, I really found exciting. So that's kind of like that was the initial inspiration for that. Okay, I looked at this in my mind as I'm making some sort of bizarre title card for this.
So, like, let me ask you a question about Tim Byrne, because in a way you sort of defined the look of his records for many, many years, and even of his label, Screwgun. Mm. And so do you think about that in those terms, or is it something where each project you just take it as it comes? Or do you think especially about Tim's stuff, like, oh. you know, let me really go to this place that I go and create this world?
I don't know. I never thought about, to tell you the truth, I never thought about that. It was just like, you know, I think a lot of the reason or how the look through Gunn and Tim Byrne was developed was I did a number of things continuously for Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was... you know, one kind of picked up where the one before it stopped. You know, I kind of got a real, you know, continuity going there of like, okay, it was like a reoccurring thing that I came back to. It was like doing I had no idea at the time that how long it would go on or you know, what the numbers would be, but it was like, you know, after a while of doing it on a fairly regular basis, it became a series. And so it was interesting for me because I was reacting to the music, but then at some point after doing a few of those, I was reacting to the music, and I was reacting to what I'd done before there. So it was like I was commenting on two things.
Right.
Which kind of like, oh, yeah, this is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Wow.
That's kind of like, you know, a set of music.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was just like it became another thing. It became another thing of itself. I mean, it's like I said to somebody once that, yeah, if you took all the Sprue Gun cover, it'd be interesting to take them and just, like, you know, line them all up and put them back to back and just, like, you know, have them go around a room and read them like you would read a comic strip or something, you know, panel by panel. Exactly. And I think I think there'd be some sort of a relationship there that I wasn't trying to consciously influence in that case, but I was aware of the fact that it's like, okay, here's another Sprue Gun thing. I'm doing it on cardboard. Okay, I did that the last time. What's going to happen this time? Oh, music changed this way, or let's say Django Bates did this record as opposed to somebody else. You know what I'm saying? So there were factors in there that changed, but at the end of the day, it was a series.
I think Tim was also hip enough, even early on, even at JMT, to realize that you were crafting a look that suited the music really well, and to allow you to really go to town on each new release.
I think he knew that before I did, to tell you the truth.
That's funny.
No, I mean, I do. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, when I met Tim, it's like, you know, I listened to rock and roll. I didn't know what jazz was, you know. Uh-huh. And it's like, I mean, so I was kind of, the whole thing's been a serious education for me along the way, and it's been great, you know. But I think Tim, I don't know, I just kind of get the feeling that Tim thought, okay, this is going to work out, and I had no idea there was anything to work out, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of came along for the ride and said, oh, wow. All right, let me put it this way. Back when I was in art school, before I ever done anything at all in the music business, you know, I used to think about, because that's what I wanted to do, and I used to think, okay, wow, I wonder how it would work, and I kind of imagined or hoped it would turn out the way that it actually has ended up turning out. I mean, and it is, you know, it's like you work with a group of people over a long period of time, and, you know, develop this body of work, you know, and it was like, and that's kind of like the way it worked out. But I had no idea that in the beginning, I had no idea, like, oh, okay, this is going to be that opportunity. It kind of turned into that.
Yeah. Well, so many of us met you because of what you did for Tim. So it's just, I'm sure, an ever-expanding circle of musicians.
Oh, yeah. I've met really great people in the time that I've been doing all this. And it's like, you know, and it's like, God, I'm still meeting them. Michael, I mean, you're like second generation of all this. You know?
Or third. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and it's like, it's really great. It's really great seeing how this thing just kind of like, you know, we're all getting older, and there's a whole bunch of youngins out there, like, keeping the whole game going.
Something I've wanted to ask you for a while, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, and thanks for coming on our podcast in the first place. But, like, when you had to do all those projects that you did at Sony, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, the pop projects. Yeah. What kind of pressures were, I mean, was it, did you edit yourself, or was there like somebody looking over your shoulder, or was it just sort of the same process of listening to the music and reacting intuitively?
Well, it certainly was that same process. I mean, sometimes I self-edited, and sometimes I got edited. the difference is, I mean, doing stuff for all you guys, there was really no editing involved. I mean, you know, because, you know, working for Sony, and it was the nature of what Sony was, or it's the nature of what the commercial record business is, you know, there are agendas other than, you know, aesthetics and whether this artwork goes along with the music or is sympathetic to that music.
Yeah, maybe in the old days, but not recently.
Yeah, not recently. No, it's been about something else, you know, and it's like, I always started out saying, I'm going to listen to the music and I'm going to do what I think is appropriate to the music. So you always start out that way. I don't think I've ever done anything that I started out saying, it's like, okay, this is going to be crap. I'm going to like go to sleep. And, you know, so you always start out that way and you give it your best shot. I mean, it's like, I've got drawers. I mean, and every once in a while I save stuff, you know, I've got drawers of stuff that weren't, that got edited, that didn't ever make it out of my office.
I remember coming up to see you at Sony and you had this office and it was almost like, there was the corporate offices I would have to go through, and then you get to the room that looked like a teenager's room with a sign on the door that says, do not enter here, you know.
They really stay out.
And then they seemed to really respect that. Like, nobody was going, you know, you had your own place.
I didn't know you had an office.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I had a real record company. I've had a couple of record company offices in my day. You know, it was like, you know, and it was cool. I mean, I was kind of, you know, the one thing that I got to say about the record business, for as much, you know, pain in the butt as they've been, I mean, you know, I was, you know, they allowed me to be the token weirdo, and that was fine. And I was completely happy to be that. You know, and I think, you know, I mean, I knew at the end of the day, like I said, I was going to have things sanded down and filed off and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But, you know, what the hell? It was always kind of amusing to me. Okay, how much can I get through? What, you know, what can I do? How many of these things can I keep intact? So, I mean, if you don't develop something like that, you get bitter and mad, and it's not good.
That's so funny. You were the resident weirdo, huh?
Yeah, I was.
When I would walk down the hall and they would see me coming and they'd be like, oh, he's going to the resident weirdo's office. Don't talk to him.
Yeah, really?
Leave
him
alone.
What he's about.
Exactly.
Uh-oh. Yeah. It's really important that people get to see your art. And I'm thinking probably the best website maybe is screwgun.com. Yeah. I just so urge everybody to go and check this artwork out. It's incredible.
And we'll post some of the images on our show page at the site as well that link.
That'd be great.
And
then
the exhibit.
And then what's the best way for people to get in touch with you or find you?
There's a button actually you can push at Screwgun that will get you to me.
Okay, great.
That's great. You know, I have, you remember when you did Soul on Soul for me?
Oh, yeah.
That was such a great cover. And I've got hanging in my living room framed a couple of strips of, you know, versions of the cover.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right, because the title changed a couple times.
Just the way that it was going to look and the way that it was, it was a tribute to Mary Lou Williams. And
right.
Was her name going to be there? But there was the picture of that black cat next to a piano.
Right on the studio floor. It was great. Yeah. That was really, I like that photograph.
So I just look at this frequently, and it's like any one of these would have been an incredible cover. They're all so great.
Yeah.
So, thank you for that.
Definitely a fascinating conversation with Steve Byram. Great guy.
Thanks, Steve.
One of the things that I'd like to talk about, if you don't mind, is one of the people that I'd like to talk about is Paul Motion.
Yeah.
He passed earlier this year, yeah?
I think it was in 2012, yeah.
And kind of an interesting character, amazing drummer, of course, with Bill Evans, but moved on in the later part of his career and influenced and played with a lot of fantastic musicians. And for me, was a bridge to a lot of different ways of thinking about music.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you said it well, like his approach, his philosophy to playing was something that had a pretty wide influence on the development of the music.
Yeah, in a very creative way.
And I wrote a piece for Paul after hearing of his passing, and he was born right around the same time of year that I was in March, and so I called the piece Middle March, and it was sort of a pleasure to play it, and it was interesting to put the piece in front of a number of different drummers. And when they see that it's dedicated to Paul, they immediately adapt. Not that they abandon playing themselves,
they play, right.
But something, there's a shift.
For sure.
And it's this language that it's very unique and identifiable.
Let's listen to that. And that was Dave Douglas playing Middle March from their album Be Still. And there are several other Paul Motion tribute albums that have come out recently. A fantastic piano player, Russ Lossing, put out the music of Paul Motion. And interestingly, this is a solo piano record.
Nice. So that's nice to hear Paul's music, and we tend to do sort of cosmic riffing sequences on these podcasts, and I kind of enjoy it. We talk about time travel, and sometimes it gets nerdy with the metronome, and sometimes it gets, geeky nerdy, futuristic. So you had this idea that we should start a series that's called The Future Inventions That Everyone's Been Waiting For. You have one for us this week.
I do. And I've been waiting for an underwater city.
Oh.
And apparently there is one being planned in Dubai.
Oh, okay.
Huh. It's got a great title.
So this is not as a cause of global climate change.
I just think these are things that have been kind of, you know, coming down the pipe for a while, and, you know, along...
No pun intended.
Yeah. You know, a la the Jetsons, in a way.
Right, so instead of going to outer space, people building
downward into... Yeah, so an underwater city, and as I said, there's one being planned in Dubai, and it has a great title, Hydropoly.
Wow. So it's like a skyscraper, but going into the water.
Yeah, well, it could be anything. It could be a domed city, like.
Right, right. You know, so.
And instead of the sky,
SpongeBob SquarePants style.
Yeah, maybe, and you could look at, you know, give a whole new meaning to sleeping with the fishes.
Oh. You've been listening to the podcast of Greenleaf Music, and it's called A Noise from the Deep. And I'm Dave Douglas.
And I am Michael Bates. Thanks for joining us.
And visit us on iTunes and leave a comment or write to us at podcast@greenleafmusic.com.
Good idea.